KALW.
What I found was just nothing like I had ever seen at any home that I have ever worked at, any program I've ever worked at.
Today, part two of our award-winning investigative series, a home administrator for people with disabilities comes forward alleging resident abuse.
It didn't sit right with me because I've never seen her do that. And to me, it just said that something was happening.
And the shocking track record of the company that operated the home.
It's been investigated by a Senate committee. It's been investigated multiple times by state regulatory agencies for abuse.
Part two of our award-winning series, Without a Voice. I'm Hannah Baba, and this is Cross Currents. Last week, KALW's investigative series, Without a Voice, won a Webby Award for Best Documentary Podcast for a Limited Series. Today, we're bringing you the second episode of the three-part series. In part one, we met Katrina Turner, a 43-year-old woman with nonverbal autism who lives in a special kind of group home for people with high support needs. Her behavior is unpredictable, and she has a history of hurting herself. So the group home is required to have a staff member monitor her 24/7. But Katrina's family was alarmed when they began finding bruises and marks on her body during visits. In today's episode, a woman who took over administration at Katrina's group home reveals what she saw behind closed doors. And reporter Chris Egusa examines how evidence he uncovered suggests a national healthcare organization called Civita Health may have allowed and even contributed to the abuse. And just a warning, this story includes descriptions of self-harm and abuse.
Okay, Ellie, I'm going to hand you back the microphone.
It's January 2023. I'm meeting a woman named Ilea Silva. Ilea works with people who have severe intellectual and developmental disabilities, things like autism, cerebral palsy, or Down syndrome. She'd built a reputation in her field as someone who excelled at working with the most challenging clients, first as a caregiver, then as administrator. She found she just had the right temperament.
I didn't take their behaviors personally, which is a vital skill in this field. You know, I found my niche and I said, this is where I want to be and where I want to develop my career.
In early 2022, before Ilea came on board, this company, Civita Health, they had a problem. Things weren't going well with the new homes. One home in particular, it's called the Illinois Home because it sits on Illinois Avenue, had gotten in trouble with some of the local oversight agencies.
Regional Center had put them on notice and let them know they needed an administrator now.
Ilea seemed like the perfect fit. She says the hiring process was a blur. Ilea didn't know exactly what had gone wrong at the Illinois home, but she felt confident that she'd be up to the task. Ilea says that what followed was a harrowing 8 months that left her mentally and physically burnt out and suspended from her job. She says the role required her to compromise her ethics and claims that she was targeted by management for speaking out. I requested an interview with Civita, but they declined. In a written statement, they said they wouldn't comment on specifics. Before I met Ilea in early 2023, I'd already been investigating the Illinois home for 8 months. The family of a resident named Katrina Turner had reached out to me. They suspected Katrina was being abused by staff and that the company was covering it up. Katrina has autism and is nonverbal. She wasn't able to accuse her abusers directly, but her family found Katrina with bruises and a black eye after a concerned staff member contacted them from a personal email account. The Illinois home, where Katrina lives, is a special kind of group home. The full name is Enhanced Behavioral Support Home, or EBSH. They're designed to house a maximum of 4 people at a time, people who need constant care and supervision. Will Leiner is a managing attorney at Disability Rights California.
They're really developed and conceptualized as part of the state and nationwide trend to no longer just warehouse people in large segregated institutions.
those big state-run facilities with hundreds or thousands of residents, many of which had a reputation for being hotbeds of abuse. In 2012, California made the decision to close down almost all of its remaining institutions over the following decade. But
there's a big question at the time, where will people be served if there are no longer developmental centers?
So the Department of Developmental Services made a plan to try and create a safety net. After some back and forth, it was finally approved in 2017. And central to this plan were these enhanced behavioral support homes.
The growth has been pretty staggering.
In just a few years, around 65 licensed EBSHs have opened, with dozens more in development. On paper, these homes look pretty good.
The homes are new, the rates are good, the staffing is funded at a level based on the needs of the people living there. We're also concerned that in practice, some of these homes are at risk of turning into the very types of institutional placements they've been designed to prevent, just on a smaller scale.
Another advocate I spoke with called them mini institutions. And that brings us back to Ilea Silva.
I think it says July 2021 is when Civita took over this home. It appeared to me that from July, pretty much until I was hired, there was absolutely no oversight.
Ilea was hired in February 2022. So that's 8 months during which, according to Ilea, it appeared that Civita was not doing the typical things that are required to operate a home like this. Things like internal audits, check-ins, and inspections. Making sure that the staff is following the rules. By law, employees are required to go through dozens of hours of training before they're even allowed to work. But Ilea says staff were not trained on even the most basic things. She found herself spending much of her time on the floor, training staff just to try and get them up to speed.
They didn't know how to process anything. They didn't know how to check a med out if they had to go on an outing, and how do we take it with us? Just the most basic things.
Ilea says it's management's job to make sure this training happens, and it just wasn't happening. I got a facility report from one of the oversight agencies called Alta Regional Center. It shows that multiple staff members at all different levels were behind on training or missing certifications. Some didn't have the experience required to even work in an EBSH. Plus, Ilea says, staff members were stretched thin. The home was chronically understaffed. These employees worked long hours, sometimes 16 or even 24-hour shifts, according to Ilea and another employee I spoke with. The clearest example of just how bad things were at the Illinois home was how staff had handled or mishandled medications. Ask anyone who works in a health field and they'll tell you. Medication management is one of the most tightly controlled, carefully documented aspects of the job.
Every medication you have in your home, you need to account for.
And EBSHs are no exception.
We have controlled medications in the home that are abused. In this field, staff do steal medications, you know. It is a reality, and it is why there are so many checks and balances.
Ilea says standard protocol is to destroy unused, out-of-date, or damaged meds at the end of each month. But at the Illinois home,
they had a year's worth of backed up meds that had not been destroyed. I have photos of a giant, gallon freezer bag that had maybe 150 pills in it. Didn't state what the medications were, didn't state who the medications belonged to.
She shared these photos with me, and she's actually underselling it here. There are also boxes and a filing cabinet full of leftover meds.
Patient here, what was your reaction to that, given what you know how it should be?
Internal panic.
Ilea says she also noticed that all of the residents seemed to be on multiple heavy-duty medications at extremely high dosages.
It's not very often that you're going to see all of the meds, and so many of them prescribed at the maxed out level.
antipsychotics, sedatives, and other powerful meds. When medications are used to sedate a resident to make them more compliant, that's actually a form of restraint.
It's not openly described as this, but it's medical restraint.
Also known as chemical restraint. Ilea says she had serious concerns that all of the residents in the home were being chemically restrained. It was a concern she shared with Katrina's family. Katrina's father, Pat Turner, who's also her conservator, and Elaine Sheffer, her stepmother.
She's walking hunched over, and she walks like a little old lady, and her mouth is open and she's drooling. And we're like, this is not Katrina.
Ilea began building a relationship with Pat and Elaine. The two are really involved in Katrina's care. They're always asking staff questions and often demand changes. It's a quality they say has not endeared them to leadership at Civita or Alta Regional Center. But Ilea says she understood where they were coming from.
My focus was, what can I do? How do we get us back on track?
At one point, the couple sent Ilea a request for Katrina's health history. She says she searched throughout the house but couldn't find the records. Since EBSHs are just converted single-family homes, there was also an attached garage that the staff used for storage. She figured what she was looking for must be out there. With the help of some staff, she started looking for Katrina's health records, sifting through the thousands of files.
That's when I slowly started to catch things in the notes and the documents that were very alarming. Things I will honestly tell you I have never seen in any of the homes that I've ever worked in.
Over Zoom, she tells me about a resident with a neurological disorder who uses a wheelchair.
There were shift notes documenting staff leaving him on the toilet for 3 to 4 hours on multiple occasions.
I was able to confirm this and many other stories from copies of shift notes Ilea shared. In one, staff discovered a leaking faucet and mold in the kitchen in February 2022. A complaint investigation report shows that the mold is still an issue 8 months later in October. Ilea says that a lot of the incidents she discovered involved Katrina. One shocking report about Katrina's behavior suggested to Ilea that she wasn't getting the water she needed and that she was forced to find it wherever she could.
I mean, with they wrote about Katrina, you know, we caught her drinking out of the toilet again. We've caught her drinking from the sprinklers again, and she's been vomiting because she got a bunch of mud and dirt in her mouth. How much was this happening?
And remember, Katrina is supposed to be monitored 24/7. Ilea says that to her, it suggested serious neglect. She decided to send all of the reports to Pat and Elaine.
You know, it's heartbreaking to send it to them, and they had no idea. Because I'm reading it, and I'm like, I am physically impacted by it. I'm about to send it to her parents.
She says that report after report indicated that Katrina was being mistreated.
I mean, there was a bunch that I found that I sent them where it was like unexplained bruises, unexplained marks.
And the shift notes tried to explain those injuries away.
Oh, she fell. Oh, she fell. Oh, this happened.
I reviewed these shift notes as well. March 5th, 2022, Katrina, quote, fell in her room at 11:30 p.m. February 24th, 2022, 4:45 a.m., quote, she fell gracefully to the floor.
She gracefully fell backwards. I mean, when I read that, I'm like, are you kidding me?
September 7th, 2021, quote, fell in her room and broke one of her front teeth. Ilea says it just didn't add up. She'd never seen Katrina fall like that.
I always joke that she's kind of like a cat because when I've seen her trip, slip, because she doesn't put her sock on all the way, she will catch herself. She will twist and turn.
She found a trail of reports leading up to the black eye and concussion Katrina had suffered in February 2022. Ilea says all the evidence pointed to one person as Katrina's abuser. The shift notes I reviewed had the names of staff redacted, so I couldn't verify this. but I could verify that most of the injuries Katrina suffered during this time happened during the night shift. And if you were to go just based on the night worker's shift notes, you'd think nothing was happening.
And said over and over again that no bruises, but other staff in the AM PM were noting that she had marks on her.
And once the AM staff came in to take over, they kept finding these massive holes in Katrina's walls. Ilea describes seeing upwards of 20 holes and dents, with some being several feet wide. To her, it seemed obvious that they were caused by Katrina banging her head against the wall repeatedly.
For me to see all the damage to her walls, it didn't sit right with me because I've never seen her do that. And to me, it just said that something was happening on these shifts, that possibly she wasn't being allowed out of the room.
It's the only thing Ilea could imagine to explain all of this. Certain staff members were locking Katrina in her room against her will all night. It's a claim echoed by other staff members I've spoken with.
Something was happening to her pretty brutally.
She says the pattern was as plain as day. Eventually, after another employee turned whistleblower, the licensing agency got involved and the staff member in question was terminated. But by that time, Ilea says the incidents had already been allowed to continue for months. She tells me that what's especially infuriating to her is that management at Savita Health, the company that owns and operates the home, had been aware that this was happening.
I have a staff statement. A staff disclosed to me that they had disclosed to Don.
That's Savita's internal investigator.
Back in June, about this staff, and it was never investigated. So it's just like, it's things like this where something is thrown out there, they really don't investigate it.
I reached out to that investigator who referred me back to Savita. Some of these allegations are difficult to prove since we can't hear from the one person who is affected most, Katrina. But many of the complaints against the Illinois home were substantiated by investigators at regulating agencies. Enough that the home was fined twice and sanctioned, basically put on a blacklist so they couldn't get any new residents. Savita declined my interview request, so I sent the company detailed allegations and a list of questions. They declined to comment on specifics, citing the privacy of the residents. They did send me a general statement. Savita promotes ethical practices at all levels of the organization, and we remain committed to our core values of integrity, respect, inclusion, and growth. They also point to staffing challenges across the industry, saying they've made significant investments to attract and retain a dedicated and compassionate workforce. And it is true that the caregiving industry is one that faces serious issues. Workers are leaving the field in droves at the same time that the need is ballooning. But as we'll see in a bit, the story isn't so simple. Ilea says that outside of some specific individuals, most of the staff at the Illinois home were doing their best. Most were undertrained, overworked, and burnt out. And these are almost all low-wage positions with lots of turnover. She says it was Savita Health and its management that didn't follow regulations, failed to follow up on complaints, and fostered a culture of negligence. Again, Savita wouldn't respond to Ilea's specific allegations. I wanted to understand more about this company, Savita Health. How is it possible that this large company with decades of experience running group homes had failed to meet the basic standards of care in this way? And was this a pattern or a one-off? One of the first things I began to understand is how central the role of money is. Though some group homes are nonprofits, California allows for-profit companies to operate them as well. And a facility like the Illinois home can bring in a lot of revenue. I asked the Department of Developmental Services exactly how much the state paid Savita Health to house the four residents at the Illinois home, including Katrina. Their answer? Just over $1.5 million this past year. It makes sense why the company would want to expand aggressively into this field. If you keep digging, though, you find that it goes deeper. Savita is actually owned by two private equity firms. Here's the rundown on private equity. These are companies that use money from investors and try to make big profits on buying and selling private companies, or companies that are not publicly traded on a stock exchange. Specifically, they try to buy a company at a low price, then make it more profitable, often by cutting costs, and ultimately sell it for much more than they paid for it. This video on Savita's website paints a much more altruistic picture.
For over 50 years, we've been right here. Here with the individuals we serve. Right here to help them grow. As a vital part of their community, we meet them where they are.
But the lilting piano and heartfelt voiceover actually hide a darker reality. Did you notice it said they'd been around for 50 years? The weird thing is if you check online records, Savita has only been in existence since 2021. That's the year the company did a rebrand. Savita used to be called the Mentor Network. And it turns out the Mentor Network had quite a reputation.
It has had a host of allegations of abuse, neglect, mistreatment of people under Mentor Network's care.
This is Eileen O'Grady. She's a lead researcher at the Private Equity Stakeholder Project. It's a nonprofit that researches private equity's impact on communities and industries, including group homes. In 2022, she authored a report that digs into the allegations that have swirled around the company.
It's been investigated by a Senate committee. It's been investigated multiple times by state regulatory agencies for abuse.
Savita slash Mentor. Yeah, I'm just going to have to call it that for the next couple minutes. Well, one of its major lines of business is running youth foster homes. The Senate investigation she's referring to found that over a decade, at least 86 children died at homes run by Savita slash Mentor. And the committee found that the company only conducted internal investigations in a handful of those deaths. That Senate investigation was prompted in part by a sweeping 2015 investigation by BuzzFeed News. In one article, BuzzFeed identified deaths, sex abuse, and blunders in screening, training, and overseeing foster parents at Savita slash Mentor. More recently, the U.S. Senate investigated Savita slash Mentor subsidiaries in Oregon and Iowa that ran homes for disabled adults. It found residents were subjected to abuse, including sexual abuse, substandard care, lack of training, and extreme neglect. In one 2017 case in Oregon, a resident's bed sores became so severe after months of neglect, they had to be relocated to a hospital over 200 miles away for treatment. Through the same time period, Savita slash Mentor has been intensely profitable. Remember those two private equity firms that owned the company? Well, Eileen says they've been making a lot of money.
I noticed that the last two private equity firms that bought it in March 2019, Centerbridge Partners and the Vistria Group, have piled debt onto the Mentor Network and used the proceeds of that debt to pay themselves hundreds of millions of dollars.
What Eileen is saying here is that these two private equity firms that own Savita have essentially siphoned money out of the company and into the hands of its investors. And they were doing it throughout the multiple scandals.
It's unconscionable that they should be making profits hand over fist just to the private equity firms while the company is, you know, continuing to mistreat the people under its care.
Again, Savita declined to comment on this. In late 2022, Ilea, the Savita administrator at the Illinois home, was sharing any and all incident reports with Katrina's parents, Pat and Elaine. And as Ilea pushed for more transparency and accountability within the company, she says it strained her relationships with her superiors.
Where the tide started turning for me, because I was seen as a problem because I wasn't moving in the manner of we're protecting company over all else.
She says one day she was talking to another administrator who told her that one of her managers had made a comment.
"We're trying to get rid of Ilea. She hasn't done anything yet for us to get her out of here. So we just have to wait until she does something."
At the time of our interview, in January 2023, Ilea had been suspended from her job. As we near the end of our interview, I can feel the gravity of what she's telling me. I ask her why she decided to come forward, knowing the risks to herself and her career.
"I don't want this to be the situation where I turn on the news one day and one of the clients has died. I just can't have that on my conscience that I didn't say something, I didn't do something."
Savita Health is no longer running the Illinois home. According to the Department of Developmental Services, it no longer operates any EBSHs in California. However, it still runs residential facilities and a number of day programs for adults with developmental disabilities in California. Chris Agusa produced the documentary Without a Voice as part of the USC Annenberg Center for Health Journalism's 2022 Data Journalism Fellowship, and it was just awarded a Webby Award for Best Documentary Podcast for a Limited Series. You can find the entire three-part series at klw.org/crosscurrents. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.